As we attempt to study and understand the history of the world, how it came to be the way it is today, it's necessary for us to define our approach. And in our presentations up till now, we've seen several approaches, the approach of a theologian, the approach of a scientist, and of course philosophy comes into this as well. Today I would like to address the role of the supernatural in understanding these things. And the supernatural is something we tend to shy away from as scientists. If it's supernatural, you can't deal with it in science. And even theologians, while their whole discipline is based on the supernatural, it's still difficult to come to grips with. So for our outline this afternoon, I'd first like to pose a couple key questions and then develop a definition for the supernatural, look at some examples from the Bible and examples from Ellen White's writings of supernatural events, and then ask the question, how has this impacted the Earth's history?
I normally wouldn't do this, but we have one car, they told me, with lights on, a purple minivan, and I hate to interrupt this, but we don't want you not to be able to get home on a cold evening. So if you have a purple minivan out there, you may want to take care of that. My apologies.
Sure. Today we live in a world where it's a scientific age, and the methods of science permeate down into many different disciplines. We almost use the scientific method without even recognizing its existence, or that we're using it, because it's based on our senses. What can you see? What can you hear? If you can see it and demonstrate it, it must be real. And the scientific method allows us to extend our senses and to make measurements of very small things, things that are very large, and comprehend them as if it were our senses that were giving us the information. And if it's in agreement with our senses, then it's got to be right, is sort of the bottom line for science. A key question then that we need to address is this. Is the evidence used to probe Earth history the result of strictly natural forces? And if the answer is yes, unequivocally, then the methods of science can be used to seek explanations. But what if the answer is no? Then the evidence is disturbed. And it's like an archaeologist who digs in a pile of dirt that's already been dug through, and he finds things at different levels, and those aren't the levels where they were originally, or what's around them isn't what was originally around them. And it's difficult to draw scientific conclusions if this is the case. The conclusions can be subject to misinterpretation. Those of us who use the scientific methodology, whether evolutionists or creation scientists, normally assume that strictly natural forces have impacted the physical evidence we're investigating. That is, all the evidence has been formed under the control of scientific laws as we understand them today. We need to probe this a little further, and we need to ask the question, does God operate within a framework of laws, including the scientific laws? And I think we would agree that yes, God does operate according to laws, and he doesn't change. He is a God of order. He loves beauty and simplicity, and his universe reflects that. Quotation from Volume 8 of the Testimonies, God does not annul his laws, but he is continually working through them, using them as his instruments. They are not self-working. God is perpetually at work in nature. Nature in her work testifies of the intelligent presence and active agency of a being who moves in all his works according to his will. Well, does this then imply that science is a reliable method for studying God's acts? Not entirely. One can study God through the methods of science and learn a lot about Him, but science, as we understand it today, is a limited subset of the knowledge that God operates under. And if we trust our science to define God, then we actually put science ahead of God, something we should not do. And there are a number of quotations we can look at that relate to this as well. The one of the Bible is Romans 1:20. I like the way the New American Standard Bible reads on this text. For since the creation of the world, His invisible attributes, His eternal power and His divine nature, have been clearly seen, being understood through what has been made. So the Bible tells us that we can learn about God through observations of nature and the things that exist around us. But on the other hand, can science fully explain it? Ellen White, quotation, Volume 8 of Testimonies, the work of creation can never be explained by science. And she makes this interesting comment about the scientists who lived before the flood. Regarding the philosophers who lived before the flood, she notes, men found out too late that the lawgiver is greater than the laws of nature, and that omnipotence is at no loss for means to accomplish His purposes. Just how God accomplished the work of creation, He has never revealed to men. Human science cannot search out the secrets of the Most High. And again, that quotation from Patriarchs and Prophets, another one also from that book, how vast the field in which the Creator can work in harmony with His own laws and yet wholly beyond the comprehension of finite human beings. So from this, we can conclude that there's much that we can learn about God through science, but it isn't the final answer. And we need to bear this in mind as we go about investigating Earth history. Let's look at supernatural and develop a definition of this term. I think we all have in mind something when I say supernatural. But we need to be quite precise in our definition for purposes of this talk. And if we go to Webster, we can find the definitions I've listed of or pertaining or proceeding from an order of existence beyond nature or the visible and observable universe, ascribed to agencies above and beyond nature, miraculous. And as a noun, we could say with the supernatural, divine operation, intervention, and so forth, hence something marvelous or miraculous. I would propose for a working definition of supernatural for this presentation that we use this. Events or outcomes which are the result of intervention by God or angels, and the angels could be either good or evil angels, and this intervention comes in natural processes or processes normally controlled by mankind. So if, for instance, we went to sleep when we were driving and our car was guided around curves and we came back to our senses and realized that someone else had been driving the car, we would say this is a supernatural event that God intervened for our benefit. But He did something that we could do had we been awake. But it would still be supernatural. On the other hand, if God prevents a storm from hitting an Adventist church and everything in the surrounding area is destroyed, we also would attribute that as a supernatural event, but it would be something beyond the human capability to control or to do, but still natural laws would seem to have been violated in that this one area was protected supernaturally. So our definition revolves largely around who does it. It's not mankind. It's not the normal things that we experience on Earth. It is an agency above and beyond what we would normally deal with, namely angels, good or evil, and or God Himself. did supernatural things happen in the era that we are looking at? And I would like to address the era from creation down to the Tower of Babel. And I'm sure we would all agree that there are many examples of supernatural events from this period, but it's rather impressive to make a list and to see how long that list really is. And you might be able to find some additional things, but these are examples from the Bible of events that we would consider supernatural according to the definition we've developed. The creation of the earth is a supernatural event. The creation of Adam and Eve, the tree of life, was supernatural in that it provided life eternal for those who continued to partake of it. The serpent who spoke to Eve, this was not a natural event. It was a serpent speaking, and that did not normally occur, and thus we would call that a supernatural event, not propagated by God, but nonetheless supernatural. The nakedness that resulted from sin. Divine visitors for Adam, Eve, Cain, Enoch, and Noah. The results of the curses on the serpent, on the ground, and on Cain. The cherubim with the flaming sword that guarded the entrance to the way of tree of life was a supernatural occurrence. A prophecy that the world would be destroyed by a flood in a certain time period. The translation of Enoch, animals entering the ark by twos and by sevens, Lord shutting in the occupants of the ark. The fountains of the deep broke up and the windows of heaven opened. The great wind God caused to pass over the earth. Animals that became afraid of mankind. And the confusion of tongues at the Tower of Babel. All examples of supernatural things that were occurring during the time period under consideration. I would like to go, in addition to these, to the writings of the Spirit of Prophecy, Ellen White, and note that there are a number of other supernatural events that occurred during this time period, according to her, the things that were revealed to her. Regarding the loss of the covering of life, light that surrounded Adam and Eve, this seems to be both a physical phenomenon and possibly even to go beyond the physical into the realm of the spiritual. And note this quotation from Patriarchs and Prophets, page 51, about how nature was perceived by humankind before the entrance of sin. On every leaf of the forest or stone of the mountains, in every shining star, on earth and air and sky, God's name was written. Order and harmony in creation spoke to them of infinite wisdom and power. So if you and I were privileged to live in the Garden of Eden, we would have no question but what there was a creator, because everything that we would come in contact with would say, this is the work of the creator. I don't think that God's name was actually written on every leaf, but I think that as the perfect pair looked at that leaf, they saw and recognized the work of their creator. And this further quotation from Eight Testimonies, 255 and 256, indicates that this light that surrounded them was somehow involved in this ability to perceive in everything they saw the Creator's hand. Notice, for a covering, a beautiful light, the light of God surrounded them. This light illuminated everything which they approached. And then she goes on to say, when they sinned, the light departed. And when they were deprived of this heavenly light, they could no longer discern the character of God in the works of his hand. Had those things that they looked at changed that drastically in that short period of time? I doubt it. It's just that their perception of these things was suddenly changed. And I would remind us that we still bear the marks of that original sin. We are not illuminated with the heavenly light. And when we look at things in nature, we do not automatically see the Creator's hand and name written. Another example of a supernatural event is the preservation of the Garden of Eden during the antediluvian period. According to Ellen White's insights, the Garden of Eden was transported from this earth to heaven and has remained there under God's care and will be transported back to the new earth at the end of the millennium, when God creates a new heaven and earth. But when Adam and Eve and the redeemed reach heaven, there's a wonderful reunion that occurs with Jesus, and then Adam and Eve are privileged again to walk in the Garden of Eden. And notice the description of great controversy about this. Tenderly, he, Jesus, bids Adam look once more upon the Eden home from which he has long been exiled. Transported with joy, Adam beholds the trees that were once his delight, the very trees whose fruit he himself had gathered. He sees the vines that his own hands had trained. I think you would agree that this is saying that the very vines that he trained are the ones that are still there alive. It's not the same species. It is the same vines. It is the same trees that are in this Garden of Eden, preserved and maintained by God, that Adam is privileged to re-enter after redemption is complete. Now, it may seem miraculous that God could do this, but I don't think most of us have considered the implications of this. If we had a perfect Garden of Eden somewhere in the world today, it wouldn't remain perfect very long without some very supernatural things occurring. Because we now understand that pollen and bacteria and seeds and all kinds of things can go through the air in and out of spaces. And if you have this occurring, the genetic material that's present in that garden is going to be altered by the foreign genetic material coming in from the outside. Gene theory tells us that there are some wonderful things occur, but DNA is not isolated. It can be affected by DNA from outside sources, even in natural processes. So in order for the Garden of Eden to have remained on this earth for approximately 1,500 years without being defiled by the sin that was going on all around it, God had to have a barrier to keep that outside environment from encroaching on it. And we don't have any way we could do that today. So that would be a supernatural event. Another example, the time of the flood, Noah was instructed to build an ark, but the spirit of prophecy tells us that the occupants of the ark were not saved as a result of the ark itself. They were saved because God protected that ark. And it's a very impressive description that she gives of how that ark was protected. Angels were sent to guide it. And even though Noah had built it according to God's instructions using the best possible material, still, it would have been destroyed by the ravages of the flood had not supernatural intervention been provided to keep the ark and its occupants safe during that time. And furthermore, she states that when the waters began to subside, that the ark was guided into a sheltered area protected by a group of mountains. The mountains that it was protected by had been preserved by God's power. Another supernatural event. And it's particularly of interest to me to see the comparison she makes between the flood situation at the time of Noah and the world situation at the end of the millennium when the earth is destroyed by fire. And we can use the analogy of one to understand the other going in both directions. So she writes, Three Spiritual Gifts, 87, when God finally purifies the earth, it will appear like a boundless lake of fire. As God preserved the ark amid the commotions of the flood because it contained eight righteous persons, he will preserve the New Jerusalem containing the faithful of all ages. Although the whole earth, with the exception of the portion where the city rests, will be wrapped in a sea of liquid fire, yet the city is preserved, as was the ark, by a miracle of almighty power. It stands unharmed amid the devouring elements. Another example of a supernatural event is the earth being made a vast burial ground, and God concealing the bodies of both dead animals and dead human beings from Noah and his family when they came from the ark at the end of the flood. Further examples. God, by his miraculous power, preserved a few of the different kinds of trees and shrubs alive for future generations. These were not things that were taken on the ark, but God preserved them nonetheless from the ravages of the flood so that there were still plants that could grow on the earth. And the particular species of animals which went on the ark were chosen and selected by God to be among those that would be saved, and those which were the result of amalgamation were destroyed by the flood, the confused species. And finally, God caused Satan to fear for his existence during the flood. Patriarchs and Prophets 99, Satan himself, who was compelled to remain in the midst of the warring elements, feared for his own existence. And that is, I think, pretty amazing, since Lucifer, Satan, was the highest of all the angels, and I don't really understand how an angel could be affected or threatened by physical phenomena occurring in a flood situation, yet Satan feared for his life during this time period. I'd like to now pose some questions which I feel the supernatural may be useful in providing a correct answer for. And there aren't very many questions on my list. We don't want to push supernatural as an explanation for everything that occurred. And yet, it's a gray area. If we say that the supernatural accounts for some things, where do we draw the line and say it didn't account for something else? And that then gets into the area of our understanding of why things are the way they are today, and why certain things are more amenable to the interpretations of science and evolutionists than they may be to those of us who believe the Bible is the first authority in these matters. So we could ask, why isn't it obvious when one looks at the earth and the evidence preserved there that the biblical record of creation and the flood are correct? Why does it look like something else happened? Why does it look like long periods of time were necessary? I would suggest that supernatural intervention may be part of the answer. Well, you say supernatural intervention by God? God wouldn't propagate a lie. Well, remember that there are other forces that could intervene as well. And those forces, of course, are primarily the devil and his agents, who could have intervened to make things different, appear to be different than they actually were. Another question, how did such diverse flora and fauna develop so quickly after the fall? You know, we see the evolutionists proposing millions of years for all the evolutionary processes that they say accounts for the diversity of life forms on this earth today. And yet, we as creationists believe that many of the creatures that existed before the flood and are now preserved in the fossil record were not things that God originally created. They were things that developed after sin came. And we say there was only 1,500 years in that time period. So how did such great diversity of things that God didn't create come into existence in such a short period of time? In actuality, we have a bigger problem than the evolutionists because we say it happened so fast. We'll address that. Why did Satan fear for his life during the flood? Why are the remains of antediluvian humans seemingly not part of the fossil record? And what about the fossil humanoids? Is there something there that would lend itself to this explanation? And as I mentioned earlier, the effects of sin on the Garden of Eden during the 1,500 years it was here on Earth seem to have not been present. And how did that occur? So I would like to propose that Satan was involved and did some supernatural things, according to our definition, that if we look at the record today, are important for us to recognize. Some facts about Satan. He was jealous of Christ's role in planning for the creation of Eden. Satan, being an angel, as far as we know, did not have procreative powers. Something that God shared with us, but not with angels. If we go to Ellen White's writings, we find that she says that the noxious plants that developed after sin, before the flood, were the result of Satan's work. And she describes his work as being ingenious methods of amalgamation. Ingenious would say something that is beyond typical human practice. Clearly, at the time Ellen White wrote, she would have known about hybridization and crossbreeding. She does not use those terms to describe this. She uses amalgamation. What does amalgamation mean? It means mixing. What do you mix? You mix the genetic material. How do you do that? The same way science today is developing genetic modifications of plants. Plants that are resistant to diseases. Plants that are resistant to insect pests to have better food crops, for instance. But obviously, if you can use it for good, you can also use it for evil purposes. And the suggestion is, I think, that Satan did that. And his having done it would account for the relatively short time period during which these things all came into existence. Furthermore, similar methods could have been used by him to develop the confused species of animals, the terrible lizards, dinosaurs, if you will, that do not appear to be part of God's original creation, that were not preserved in the ark and brought through to this side of the flood and were present on the world as we see by the fossil record. It's interesting that Ellen White makes this statement, this one here in Three Spiritual Gifts, page 64. If there was one sin above another which called for the destruction of the race, the human race, by the flood, it was the base crime of amalgamation of man and beast, which defaced the image of God and caused confusion everywhere. Notice, this is a sin above all other sins that caused God to come down and destroy the earth with a flood. And what was the sin? It was making confused species, both of man and beast. Here, I think, is a hint as to where the humanoid fossils that are found in the world today may have come from, and also an explanation for the other species on this earth that were not saved in the flood. Now, how did mankind learn to do that? Well, they were very intelligent. They may have been able to develop it on their own, but I suspect that Satan was also involved, and he had a personal role in these activities, and that very possibly that is why God compelled him to remain among the warring elements during the flood itself, because God was so angry with what he had done in destroying the beauty and the wonder of the creation that God had made, that God made him fear that he was going to be destroyed along with the world that he had confused during the flood. I would suggest that we have greatly underestimated the extent to which Christ's arch rival, Satan, the would-be creator, was personally involved in the rampant degradation and change in life forms that exist on the earth. So we've established that supernatural events occurred, that very likely both God and the forces of evil were involved in perpetrating supernatural events. And so we need to ask the question, is it appropriate, and when is it appropriate, to invoke the supernatural as an explanation for the record that we find in the world today? I'd just like to point out that what we understand to be science is not all there is to science. And great scientists recognize that the science we have and understand today, in some cases, is not adequate to explain even the things that we observed in the current time period. So Stephen Hawking, a great astronomer, has written that he recognizes that naturalism or scientific laws are insufficient to provide a complete explanation for the cosmology of the universe. He is saying that there are things that are supernatural that had to have occurred in order for our universe to be what it is today. And we continue as Christian scientists to allow science to dictate to us some facts. And it's within the realms of the scientific method and the scientific knowledge that we have today. One of the issues that we face is the apparent large redshift of distant objects in space, and we actually use the redshift, which is a shift in the apparent wavelength of certain characteristic spectral features, for instance, the hydrogen Lyman alpha emission. And as this redshift occurs, it's proposed that the speed of the object away from us causes the redshift. The faster it's going, the larger the redshift. And if we all started out at the same time at the same place, things that are going the fastest are going to be the furthest away. And so the things with the largest redshift are assumed to be furthest away. And from this, we can estimate an age for the universe. And it's back 13 to 15 billion years is the estimate. And it's all based on this spectroscopic data. No one's ever gone out there and measured it, but this is the basis for it. If we use the theory of relativity to look at this question, we find that there could be another explanation for these redshifts. And this has been proposed by D. Russell Humphreys in the book Starlight and Time, and he proposes a scenario in which the entire universe could be only as old as the 6,000 or so years that we attribute to the age of the Earth, and that the redshifts developed could be the result of relativistic events, so that while 6,000 years of time have passed on this Earth, billions of years of time could have passed elsewhere in the universe, and it would only appear to be billions of years, but it depends on where you're located for your clock to decide how much time really has passed, because time is relative in these scenarios. If we think of science as a series of nesting boxes, we are inside one of these boxes. Now, a box that's inside the box that we're in would be Newtonian mechanics. And you can use Newtonian mechanics to predict many things, and it works very well, but it's limited to things that are far away from the speed of light. And in order to account for those things, we'd have to go to Einsteinian physics, relativistic physics, and that's a bigger box that nests around this smaller box. We don't know what boxes lie outside the boxes we're in the boxes we've studied. You can't imagine what the next box is like. And our earlier statements that God doesn't annul his laws in order to work within the universe doesn't say that he works within the box that we understand. He could be working in boxes that we have no knowledge of that our box is nested in, and thus the science that we think is apropos is indeed too limited to fully understand and comprehend the work that God has done and is doing. So when should we use the supernatural or invoke it as an explanation? We need to realize that the great controversy theme does overarch our Seventh-day Adventist perspective, and that two powers working in opposition are present in the universe. We need to realize that the Creator is a key objective of, or discrediting the Creator is a key objective of Satan. And we need to give recognition to the fact that both God's power and Satan's power have been exercised in this earth. And the Bible gives us some hint that this is going to be an issue in the last days. We heard this morning from Dr. Baldwin a beautiful analysis of the first angel's message and the fact that this message is one that's designed for the time in which we live. I would suggest that the message to the seventh church, to Laodicea, that begins with the proclamation of God as being the Amen, the beginning of the creation of God, is there for a specific reason, because the seventh church period is a period when God is not recognized as creator. In fact, most of the references to God as creator in the book of Revelation occur within the context of the time in which we live. It's as if God knew in advance that there would be an attack on his creatorship by Satan at this time. And if God knew it, certainly Satan was planning it. And when did he begin his plan? Well, he may well have begun his plans as soon as sin entered this world and as soon as the Garden of Eden experience was over, so that these records we look at in nature in the world today may have the marks of an enemy. As Jesus described the one who planted the tares among the wheat, it was an enemy that did this, and it was an enemy that set up some of the things that we struggle with today when we limit our study to the laws of science. This quotation from Great Controversy, I think, is one that we need to consider carefully as we think about these things. It's on page 625. Only those who have been diligent students of the Scriptures and who have received the love of truth will be shielded from the powerful delusion that takes the world captive. By the Bible testimony, these individuals will detect the deceiver in his disguise. To all, the testing time will come. Then she asks, are the people of God now so firmly established on his word that they would not yield to the evidences of their senses? Would they, in such a crisis, cling to the Bible and the Bible only? Question that we each one need to answer in our own heart of hearts. So in conclusion, I would suggest that supernatural events and manifestations were prominent in early Earth's history, that both God and Satan were involved as causative factors in certain happenings during this time. And finally, the extent to which supernatural intervention has affected the record which we access today is unknown and will remain unknown probably for all of this earth's history until God reveals his truth to us in the new world. May we be there together.
This special presentation has been brought to you by American Cassette Ministries.